Good morning. It's good to see everyone out today. It's a holiday weekend. We've exchanged some of our own members with visitors, and we are grateful that you're here with us today. For the visitors, I'm not your regular preacher. On the first Sunday of every month, we have opportunity to volunteer to preach, and this just happens to be my Sunday. Wayne Chamberlain is our regular preacher, and he's out of town. We'll be back with us soon. Thanks, Brent, for reading those scriptures. Proverbs will not be our topic today, at least the first seven verses, but it does lay a foundation for what we'll be talking about here. So you remember the old saying, there's three things you don't want to talk about with people: money, politics, and religion, right? Well, for today, I'm going to add a fourth. The fourth is we don't want to talk to people about how to raise their children. After all, who wants to be told how to raise their child? Well, we're going to break most of those rules here this morning. Some of the notes actually came from a lesson I heard back in 1999 with Valerie. We were at Grinnell, Iowa at their lectureships that weekend, and I had jotted some notes down. It's just a part of a bigger lesson that someone had given. Keep in mind, my children at that time, Mary-Kate was 4 years old and Gabe was one. And I kind of wish I would have looked back through those notes through the years, other than just a couple of weeks ago or last week. There's some things I think I could have done better. We'll talk about a few stories that are personal here this morning, not a lot. And you'll hear some regrets, some mistakes that her and I have made through the years. And hopefully we'll mention these things so that you can learn as well. So if I ask each one of you here today who are parents, and that's the bulk of us, we've all been children, so I think it'll pertain to everyone, but if we were to ask each of you parents here today, what's your main goal for your children? What are some things you would like to see them accomplish? And let's take it a little more seriously here. I think there's some things we could throw out. We want them to be the best whatever, banjo player, or the best orator, or the best student, and those are all fine and good. But when it comes right down to it, I think there's some things that we would all agree upon, and I think one of them that we would like to see our children accomplish is we want them to grow up and become Christians. We want them to learn God's word to the point that they can make a decision and choose to put on Christ in baptism. I'll tell you a personal story about this. When our children were getting close to that age, and our children, as you know, aren't that far apart in age, when they were starting to get close to that age where decisions can be made, we sit right about where Curtis and Steve sit, right in that area. And depending on where the children sit at that time, of course, your children don't sit with you when they get to a certain age. They're either behind us or the front of us or off to the side. And as we went through the sermon and you heard the invitation and, you know, everybody stood to sing and there was the invitation song, and I felt like I could just have laser eyes right through the back of my children. I wanted to will them to walk forward and be baptized into Christ. And I just kept thinking that whole time, if that song could be about 8 or 10 verses long, I would really like that. And you know, you think about those things, and you lose a little sleep over it. You think about it. You talk to your spouse about it. But in the end, it's your children's decision to put on Christ. After that occurs, what's another thing that we would like to see our children do? Well, we'd like to see them to stay faithful in the Lord. And while I won't talk very much on this subject, because that's a whole subject on its own, how many parents that we know whose hearts are broken when their children decide to be unfaithful to the Lord? And I think a third thing that we would like to see our children to do, if we asked each one of us, is as they grow older to that point in age where they can find a spouse, we would like to see them marry a good Christian person. And the reason we like to see that is we know full well what the Lord thinks of divorce. He hates it. And that's not something we would want our children to go down that path. So I think those are the three things, and you can disagree with me. That is perfectly fine. Those are the three things that Valerie and I have thought about, and I think it's some things, knowing some of you well, that you think of for your own children. And it's interesting. I think the thought of, will our children be successful? I think if we really thought about that, that is way down the list. Will they be successful? Will they be happy? Really, and that's something we talk a lot about in society. Will they be happy? Will they have joy in their life? Will they be at peace and have contentment? And the answer to all of those is yes. We would want them to have all of those things. But I think it first starts with becoming a Christian, putting on the Lord in baptism. It doesn't always work as well as we would like, does it? If you look over in 1 Samuel 2, we see the story of Eli and his two sons. I usually pronounce these names wrong, but Hophni and Phinehas, something along those lines, but you'll get the idea. Hophni and Phinehas in 1 Samuel 2, we'll see a few things that these two young men have been up to and how it's disturbing to their father, Eli. In 1 Samuel 2, 17, speaking of these two men, it says, "Thus the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for the men despised the offering of the Lord." Goes on as through the list in 22 and 23. It says, "Now Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who served at the doorway of the tent of meeting. He said to them, 'Why do you do such things, the evil things that I hear from all these people?'" So they're treating the offering of the Lord with contempt, and they're having relations with women that they shouldn't have. But, you know, all the sins that Eli or that Hophni and Phinehas committed could really lead back to verse 12 of 1 Samuel 2, where it says, "Now the sons of Eli were worthless men. They did not know the Lord. They decided to go the other way, down a different path, rather than serving God." Well, in the end, the two men were killed. When Eli heard this later on in 1 Samuel, when Eli heard this, he falls over with grief, bumps his head, and he dies as well. So not a good ending for this family. So what do we do whenever our children start to head down this path of sin? Well, we tend to pull them in a little closer to us, don't we? We want to hold them a little tighter, a little longer, telling ourselves that if we do these things, that things like rebellion and disobedience won't occur. Poor decisions won't happen. We'll say no a lot to our children. Try to insulate them from the world and the sin that might be out there, sins that are out there. And so we tend to just pull them a little, maybe a little too close. One of the regrets that Valerie and I have is we didn't say yes enough to the things that we could say yes to. Think about that for a moment. Saying yes to our children, to the things that we can say yes to. For example, in our congregation here, saying yes to requests by others who want to include your child with other children in Christian homes. The activities that we have here in our congregation, saying yes to our children, that will have you go to VBS. We'll have you go to day camp. After a gospel meeting, the answer is yes if you want to go have ice cream with other fellow Christians. Saying yes to attending devotions and overnight studies. And even branching out and saying yes to having some of the neighborhood or school kids over to your home. Allow yourself and your children's influence, godly influence, to help others come to Christ. So if that's one regret we've had, actually we've had several, but that is one mistake I think we made over the years, is we didn't say yes enough to our children when they asked us to participate in some of these things. Back to Proverbs, if we wanted to take the rest of the morning and read Proverbs 1 through 4, we could, and we'd learn all about there is to know about raising children. We won't do all of that, and no, we won't even do it just yet, so don't turn there. Actually, you can turn over to Titus 2. Titus 2. Before I go any further, I forgot. If you're taking notes, some of the kids take notes, do worship reports and sermon notes. If you want to title the top of your page, this sermon is called, What a Child Can Expect from Their Parents. What a Child Can Expect from Their Parents. Okay, so let's talk about that. What can a child expect from their parents? First and foremost, I believe they can expect love and compassion from us. Love and compassion. If you look at Titus 2, and in verse 4, Paul says, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands so that the word of God will not be dishonored. I cut right in the middle of a thought here that Paul has, but he's advising the older women to instruct the younger ones how to live their lives, loving their husbands, loving their children. Over in Psalms 103, in verse 13, the writer there instructs us as well. It says, just as our God the Father has compassion upon us, we are to have that same kind of compassion upon our own children. Have compassion upon your children. Love your children. As I was putting this point together, I wanted to ask those who have been longtime members here, if you remember Rick Lanning, and I'm sure you do, Rick Lanning has given us a couple of gospel meetings over the years. And think back, if you remember, this is what I remember about Rick, how he starts his sermons. Does anybody want to answer how he starts his sermons?
I love you.
I love you too. I love you. I love you. I think he started every single one of them like that the two times that he's been here for the gospel meeting. I'll tell you a little story about an individual. 2 years ago this month, a 16-year-old young man was driving home from his girlfriend's house up in Iroquois County. And he was driving on a main road. It wasn't a county highway. It's something we call a slab up there. But he was driving home, heading west up near Clifton, Illinois. As he was driving west, he came up upon a car and decided to pass the car. As he swung out in the left-hand lane, for whatever reason, he veered off the road, hit a culvert, took out two trees, and then hit directly into a third one. Will was about 3 to 4 miles from his house, and someone called his mother. So his mother comes out to the crash site, road shut down, goes over to her son, Will, and there's no question what's going to take place. So she sits down and holds his hand, and he dies. I don't know, while I do know the family, I don't know their spiritual background. But I'm certain and I'm confident that the three words that Rick Lanning says in his sermons, I love you, would have been repeated right then as her son died right before her. That was 2 years ago this month. Be concerned about your children. Pray for and with your children. Remember what Job did in Job 1? Says Job rose early in the morning and offered burnt offerings unto God. I don't expect you to go offering burnt offerings to your children. Maybe you don't even rise early in the morning, but choose a time of day to make sure you're praying to God. Ask yourself questions like, do my children hear me speak their name to God in prayer? When you're praying as a family unit, do you pray to God and speak your children's name? Do your children know you love them enough that you're willing to petition God for his help for them? Love and compassion toward our children. That is something our children expect from us, parents. The provisions of life. If you want to look over in 2 Corinthians 12 with me. 2 Corinthians 12. Now, this is one that we talk about probably the most often, right? The provisions of life. Children should expect food and clothing, shelter, health care, maybe even an education from us parents. Those should be a given. In 2 Corinthians 12, in the midst of Paul telling the Corinthian brethren that he doesn't want to be a burden to them, he says this in verse 14. Here for this third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be a burden to you, for I do not seek what is yours, but you. For children are not responsible to save up for their parents, but parents for their children. It is the role of the parent to provide for the child, not the child to provide for the parent. In 1 Timothy 5:8, we also don't want to be considered as denying the faith or being worse than an unbeliever by not providing for our own household. That's a tough verse with negative connotations, but if anything, it should help motivate us to make sure we are giving our children what they need. But really, if we want to look at the provisions of life and what our children need to be provided with, we can go to Proverbs. And while us men might think that we're the ones that walk out the front door every day and we're the ones who go to work and make the money and bring it home, and then it gets, you know, bacon gets fried up in the pan or whatever the saying says. Look at Proverbs 31. Look at the Proverbs 31 woman, the mother and the wife. Let's see how she fulfills her obligations toward her husband and children. Starting in verse 31 of Proverbs 31. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. And we could go on through that, but we'll stop right there for now. So the provisions of life, and I don't necessarily want to talk a lot about that because we talk about it enough, but that is something that our children should expect from us. Something else that our children should expect from us is understanding. And we might think and say, well, we've got this. To be understanding to our children, I'm a good listener. I'm willing to listen with patience, everything that my child tells me, and we'll be like the Waltons, and living up on the mountain, and everybody will be happy. Has anybody's emotions ever got to them? Fathers, mothers, in the heat of the moment? Another regret. Colossians 3:21, the King James Version says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." Right before that, Paul says in verse 18, it says, "Wives, be subject to your husbands, as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives, and do not be embittered against them. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Then fathers, do not exasperate or provoke your children, so that they will not lose heart." Being a parent doesn't give us the license and the privilege to ridicule, berate, and humiliate our children because they've been disobedient, thinking that this will put them on the straight and narrow pathway. Now, it's up to us as parents to have patience and understanding, an understanding heart, a good attitude when it comes to our children, not allowing the emotions to get the best of us. If you think about the story of the prodigal son over in Luke, think if that story would have went differently. If you look over in Luke and in verse 15, let's see what the father says to his son as the son returns, repentant, asking for help. It says in verse 20, it says, "So he got up and came to his father," speaking of the son, "while he was still a long way off. His father saw him and felt compassion for him and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, quickly bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fattened calf, kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. And they began to celebrate. He was dead and became alive again, lost and now found. What a great story of salvation. But instead, what if when the son was coming toward the father sees him and he says this, "You no good for nothing, son, you're a bum. You stole my money, and you squandered your inheritance, and now you come back. Now, why don't you go run along now, son? Because when your brother finds out you're here, I don't know what he's going to do to you, but it won't be good. So why don't you go run along, go back to where you came from, and when I think you've suffered enough, I'll come for you." Could you imagine if the story went that way? What do you think the chances are that the son is going to want anything to do with his father when his father comes to him? Love and compassion, having an understanding heart toward our children is something that we need to make sure we have. Leadership and example. You can't talk about children without talking about how to be the proper role model in your family and leading by example. In 2 Timothy, probably the easiest example that we see because it says it right in the verse, Paul talks about Timothy and where his example had come from. In 2 Timothy 1:5, it says, "For I am mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I am sure that it is in you as well." I want you to think about that for a moment when it comes to the women in the household, the mothers, the wives. And the best example I can give on this is think over the years how often we've seen mothers, daughters, and granddaughters who have participated in acts of edification. And the one that comes to my mind the most often is think about the food that's given at funerals. We see it all the time. If you've lived long enough, you've been to visitations, you've been to funerals. You know, a lot of the ladies in the congregation will put together food and give it to the family or create a meal for the family after the funeral. And that's a nice gesture, seeing the food that's given. But maybe what we don't see enough of, or we do, it happens, but we don't see it, is we're not aware of the encouraging words, or maybe the pat on the back or the firm hug that the woman gives to console the other person. It's those good traditions that still exist, but it's because of the leadership and the example of the mothers and the grandmothers who are in the families. It's that leadership role that they've taken that helps continue on these good traditions that we need to have and hold on to. Now, not all of my examples are about the mother-daughter, father-son relationship. We've talked about Paul and Timothy already. I want you to look over in 3 John and see the letter that John has written to a man that he has a lot of love for in 3 John. John gives advice here to Gaius, but he sandwiches the advice between two very different people. If you look at 3 John, starting in verse 9, John says, "I wrote something to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them, does not accept what we say. For this reason, if I come, I will call attention to his deeds, which he does, unjustly accusing us with wicked words. And not satisfied with this, he himself does not receive the brethren either, and he forbids those who desire to do so and puts them out of the church. Beloved," and here's the advice, "do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. The one who does good is of God. The one who does evil has not seen God. Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone, and from the truth itself. And we add our testimony, and you know that our testimony is true. Leadership and example. Where are we spending our time, parents? Is it with the Diotrephes of the world, or is it with Demetrius? Where do we spend our time with our family? Are we participating in things that we shouldn't, things that are evil? Or are we trying to focus on the things that are good? The last point that I want to make is about training and discipline. You can't get through a sermon like this either without talking about training and discipline, right? And you can't do that without talking about Ephesians, so we'll go to Ephesians. In Ephesians 6, and what supports our catchphrase here in Ephesians, the first four verses of chapter 6, catchphrase being walking worthy. Paul begins the chapter with the expectation of the child and leads into what the child should expect from the parent. In the first four verses, it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with the promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth." And then the verse that we're familiar with as well, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Right after Solomon wrote Proverbs, those first seven verses, and gives us the reason as to why he wrote these, immediately he goes into the instruction for individuals. In Proverbs 1 and verse 8, he says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching." He goes down a little further here in this same chapter. Solomon says, "My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path." Now, who is he talking about here? Let's actually go back up to verse 10. In verse 10, Solomon says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." So he's speaking of sinners. "If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse.'" Solomon states, don't do that. Don't walk with them. Don't walk in their path. We can continue over in chapter 2 of Proverbs. The obligation that children still have for the parent. In the first two verses, it says, "My son, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding." So as children, you do have some obligation and a commitment to listen to your parents and what they are going to say. If you go on then in Proverbs chapter 4, if the children are going to listen to us, what are we going to give them as parents? In Proverbs 4, beginning in verse 2, it says, "For I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction." So parents, where will our sound teaching and our instruction come from? Goes on and says, When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart fold fast by my words. Keep my commandments and live. Acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her and she will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you." Speaking of wisdom, the beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom. And with all your acquiring, get understanding. Prize her, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a garland of grace. She will present you with a crown of beauty. "Hear, my son, and accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have directed you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in upright paths. When you walk, your steps will not be impeded. And if you run, you will not stumble. Take hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life." Again, parents, what are we teaching our children? What is this truth and understanding that Solomon is talking about? God's holy word. Let's go back to 3 John one more time here in the same 3 John. So we look at training and discipline. Does anybody like to discipline children? I don't know about you, but I don't get a lot of joy out of it. I still have one, I guess, to discipline. I guess someone else has to work with Mary Kate. But I still have one that I have to teach. But can't there be joy when it comes to these things? Again, look what John says to Gaius in the first four verses. He says, "The elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Behold, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health, just as your soul prospers. For I was very glad when brethren came and testified to your truth." That is, how you are walking in truth. Now look at what John says to Gaius. And again, this isn't, as far as I'm aware, this is not a father-son relationship, but it still holds true to us as parents. He goes on in verse 4, and he says, "I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth." Now, way back in the first part of this sermon, if one of your goals was that I would like for my children to grow up and put on Jesus Christ in baptism and walk faithfully with him in life, how is that going to be possible if we're not teaching them what they need to be taught so that those things can occur and that we can have this same joy that John has with Gaius, knowing that children or brethren continue to walk faithfully in God's truth. So there are 5 points for your notes. What should children expect from their parents? Love and compassion. Provisions of life. They should expect from us an understanding heart, an understanding attitude. They should know that we are the leaders of our family and that we will be the proper example for them. And that, yes, when the time comes and it has to happen, we'll discipline them because we love them. And we'll continue to train them in the ways that they should walk. While the expectations of the child can be met by other people, all 5 of these things that I've mentioned here now can be met by other people. I don't believe Scripture is talking about it takes a village to raise a child. I think when we look at the Holy Scriptures and what God has intended for parents, it is the parent that takes the lead role in raising their children. So what goes wrong? Well, as we're raising children, it takes a lot of time and energy, a lot of loyalty, a lot of protection. At the same time, as parents, what do? We worry about jobs and careers, finances, relationships with our spouse. We worry about our relationships with families and friends. And all these things tend to zap our energy. They take away our zeal for something that the Lord has wanted us to do, and that is to raise our children. That is the expectation of our child, is that as a parent, we will take on this role. So there's a certain path which we want our children to travel down. I don't know what that path is for you as the parent to your child. But whatever it is, we need to make sure that as a parent, we're already on that path. Out of the 5 things we talked about today, I tend to hear personally more about the provisions of life that we'll provide for our children. Now, if we think for a moment that our child only expects of us to put food on the table and clothing on their back and a roof over their head, we're falling short of the expectations of that child. I don't know where you stand as a parent. There's a lot of you here. I don't know where you stand as you raise your children. Maybe these things will help you get back on the right path. Maybe you're already going down that right path and you're using these methods already. Whatever the case is, let's redouble our efforts. The future of the Lord's church is right before our very eyes. Let's make sure we raise them properly. We want them to be a part of the Lord's church when that time comes. Brent has given us a song to sing. Sorry, I did not even get with you on the topic, but he's got a good theme going. So if there is a way or a means that we can help you here tonight, here today, we do invite you to come forward. It's something that we want to be able to pray with you with for, that we can petition God for. Maybe it's for you as a parent, maybe it's for your children, or maybe it's for something going on in your life that we are not aware of. But whatever the case is, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.